You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings, 12. This is Corbin Smith, your host for Locked On Seahawks. Joining me for our Monday episode, my co-host in crime, Rob Rang. Hope everyone had a great weekend. Glad to have you listening in to our latest jam-packed installment of Mock Draft Monday. Today's episode is brought to you by Built Bar. Go to builtbar.com and use promo code LOCKED15 and you'll get 15% off your next order. Now for your lead story here on Locked On Seahawks. While it's far from the most pressing rule change set to be discussed and voted on by NFL owners this offseason, a proposal to expand the use of single-digit numbers for different position groups appears to be gaining traction. Currently, only quarterbacks, punters, and kickers are allowed to wear single-digit uniforms 1 through 9, but a proposal pitched by the Chiefs would allow teams to roster running backs, receivers, tight ends, and defensive backs with those numbers in 2021 and beyond. Rob, I know it might seem like a silly discussion here, but the Chiefs actually raise a valid point with this proposal because they were one of a handful of teams last year that actually ran out of numbers to roster players at a couple of position groups due to injury issues. In today's modern NFL, that should not happen.
Well, it should not happen, and I think that it's kind of silly, just the idea, Corbin, that you're going to limit which players can wear which jersey numbers. I mean, I have a great deal of confidence in Steve Rabel and the rest of the Seahawks announcers out there that they would be able to make that adjustment, recognizing the different players wearing their different jersey numbers. And you think about how many high-profile Seahawk players that wore single-digit numbers back in their college days. And as you said, it can be perceived by some as a little bit silly, but I can tell you my conversations with players and even the tiny little bit that I played back in high school, the number that I wore was significant, something I'm never going to forget. And that when you start to have the success that these players had before they were actually, entered into the NFL and had to change their jersey numbers, a lot of that is personal. A lot of that does mean something. So I think that this is a fun little rule that the no fun league, as the NFL sometimes has been called. I think that it would be something that could make it that much more interesting for fans and that much more meaningful for players alike.
As you mentioned, and from my perspective as a player, I know my number at the high school level meant as much as anything to me on the football field because one of my best friends had a brain tumor in middle school, and he's had recurring brain tumors actually a couple of times, but his favorite number was 24, and I told him in eighth grade that I was going to wear that number for the rest of my football career, however long that took me. And so if I was able to play college ball or in the NFL, I would be trying to do everything in my power to get on the number 24 for that reason. And I think a lot of players in the NFL, they hang on to reasons like that for the numbers that they pick. And so I've always thought it's a little bit crazy that players don't have a little bit more flexibility in the NFL to be able to pick their jersey numbers, a wider range of numbers. Players like Bobby Wagner, he wore number 9 at Utah State. Carlos Dunlap, I do find it comical when big defensive linemen are wearing single-digit numbers. Like, how funny would it be seeing Brian Monet wearing number 1? But Carlos Dunlap wore number 8 at Florida. Quandre Diggs, number 6 at Texas. Jordan Brooks, number 1 at Texas Tech. Alex Collins, kind of ironic, his number was number 3 when he became just the 3rd running back in SEC history to have 3 straight 1,000-yard rushing seasons to open his career. John Ursua wore number 5. DJ Reed wore number 2. All those players could not have picked those jersey numbers at the NFL level because of the rules in place. But I think that's the fun, unintended consequence if this rule ends up passing, is that a number of these players, I don't know if any of Seattle's guys are going to do this. Bobby Wagner was joking with me on Twitter about this today that, maybe I will change number 9. And then he made it clear, most likely I'm not changing my number. Fans don't need to be fearing about that. But I think there will be players around the league that take advantage of this opportunity if it passes to try to go back to the numbers they wore in college and even high school if they're allowed to. And so I think that's going to make this kind of a fun experience when it's all said and done, unless you're somebody that owns that player's jersey and now you're like, oh, wait, they don't wear this number anymore.
Yeah, and that's actually happened. I remember buying my brother a jersey for Sean Springs when the Seahawks selected him. And, you know, something a lot of Seahawks fans may not remember, those that do remember Sean Springs, he wound up playing for years in Seattle with a number 24. But his original jersey was number 26, and that is the jersey that I bought my brother. And we were a little bit disappointed when Sean Springs and the Seahawks decided to change the jerseys. And I love that you mentioned Bobby Wagner specifically. Of course, his number now is number 54, which doesn't take a real mathematician to be able to add 5 and 4 to get that number 9 that he did wear at Utah State, into such an extremely high level of play, of course, to wind up being selected where he was out of Utah State for the Seahawks. And then Carlos Dunlap as well. I mean, you know, if he was to go back to his college jersey number, would that look that different than the in my opinion, the kind of goofy number 43 that he wore for the Seahawks last year.
He's still going to wear.
Exactly. So I think this is kind of a fun opportunity for NFL players to show a little bit more of their individuality, who they are as men and what they care about, rather than just being just another player out there with a helmet.
This measure will be voted on by owners later this month. Like every other proposed rule change, they need at least 24 votes to approve. From everything that I've been hearing, it sounds like this is going to pass with flying colors. Because as I said earlier, I do think the Chiefs raise a very valid point here. There needs to be more jersey number options so they can avoid some of the situations that became apparent last year during a COVID-19 season, where teams just didn't have numbers available to roster players at certain positions. So I anticipate this will pass, and we'll see how many players that have already been in the NFL try to change their jersey number to a new number that they'll now be allowed to wear. When we return for the second quarter as part of our Mock Draft Monday series, we're going to look at 4 mock drafts coming from national outlets. Which players do the Seahawks end up with at pick 56? We're going to analyze and diagnose all 4 of those selections when we return. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Bet Online is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Football might be over, but the NBA, college basketball, and NHL are in full swing. Bet Online even covers awards, TV shows, and reality TV. Real-time updated odds and props on almost anything you can imagine. Bet Online has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet Online, your online sportsbook experts. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. Thanks for listening into our Monday episode. This is your host, Corbin Smith, joined as always by Rob Rang. We're covering everything you need to know about the Seahawks, but what about the rest of sports? Now the Locked On Podcast Network has you covered there as well with Locked On Today. It's hosted by the great Peter Bukowski, and it's all the sports news you need every morning in under 20 minutes. Subscribe to the Locked On Today podcast wherever you get podcasts. It's Mock Draft Monday. Rob, we're going to switch things up just a little bit this week. Rather than having our listeners submit full mock drafts, we actually wanted to take a look at what national outlets are projecting for the Seahawks to do with their first selection, pick number 56 at the end of the second round. There's been a lot of mock drafts coming out here in recent weeks, and you'd expect that. We are now less than a month away from the actual draft happening on April 29th through the 31st. So without further ado, we're going to be diving into 4 particular mock drafts from the Draft Network, CBS Sports, Pro Football Network, and last but not least, Pro Football Focus. We're going to be looking at the selections they made for the Seahawks with that second round selection and discuss those players a little bit. Let's start with the Draft Network. And this is a player that we have talked about a few times earlier this offseason. Alabama, as usual, has several really good offensive linemen that are entering the draft. One of them is Alex Leatherwood, the big old tackle that had a very impressive pro day. He ended up being far more athletic than I anticipated, because the one thing I would say about Leatherwood, Rob, is that when you watch the film, there are times that he looks rigid, that his mobility doesn't look where you would expect it to be. But then he went out and did really well in Alabama's pro day and really exceeded, at least from my opinion, my expectations in terms of his overall athletic profile.
Yeah, Alex Leatherwood's a really intriguing guy, Corbin. I mean, he's a big, long-armed athlete. He's pretty light on his feet. I wish that he played with the consistent physicality that his size and that Alabama reputation might lead you to believe. And that's one of the reasons why I think that he could be available at number 56 overall. So I like that. It is a selection that I've made for Seattle, in a previous mock draft for Lindy Sports, in the draft magazine that's available out there. I did make Alex Leatherwood, again, Seattle's selection. And so I think that there is a connection there. I think that there it would make a lot of sense because of his upside. He has been the 3-year starting left tackle for the Crimson Tide, and so that is a potential replacement down the road for Dwayne Brown. I think that he has enough of the athletic ability to be able to make that transition to right tackle, maybe even guard as well. But again, you just want to see a guy who has a little bit more, growl to his game, because there are times where it did feel like he was not quite as consistent as you would like. And considering this, how high of the competition that he was going up against week in and week out, that's something that just has to be better. But again, that the Seahawks, they always are willing to gamble a little bit more on upside. They like those unfinished products. And so I think that Alex Leatherwood would make some sense for the Seahawks.
Looking at his athletic testing, 4.95 in the 40-yard dash at 312 pounds, that's pretty impressive. 34.5-inch vertical jump, that is really explosive for a player of that size. And obviously, as you said, a 3-year starter at Alabama, was on that championship team a year ago. So a player that looks like he still has a lot of untapped potential and yet had a really good college career, could be the heir apparent for Dwayne Brown at the left tackle spot. Meanwhile, CBS, they took a little different approach here, and I anticipated we would see some national outlets picking this position in the second round with Jaron Reed now being in Kansas City. CBS mocked Davion Nixon out of Iowa to the Seahawks at pick 56. And we actually talked about this player about a week and a half ago. He is my number 2 defensive tackle in this year's class. And so I don't know that he makes it to pick 56. That said, this is not a very good defensive tackle class. So maybe those couple top guys fall further than expected. And maybe he's still there at 56. The one thing that stands out is he was really kind of a spur of the moment breakout star in 2019, had a big season, didn't have as many sacks this year in a shortened season for Iowa, but this is a guy with an explosive first step. He's got some nice counter moves. Once he gets into the backfield, he has the ability to finish. Got a lot of sacks in the last couple of years for the Iowa Hawkeyes. He also had an interception. He returned 71 yards for a touchdown in a game this year. You just don't see big fellas that can move like that and make interceptions and finish plays off like that. And so to me, he would be a natural 3-tech fit for Jaron Reed that could start for you on day one next to Puna Ford, and you would have a nasty 1-2 punch there under contract for at least the next 2 seasons together.
Yeah, no, I think that it makes a lot of sense. I think the defensive tackle is one of the positions that Seattle has to try to continue to address. I mean, even with the bringing in Al Woods, I mean, you're talking about a very different type of player with Davion Nixon. As you said, he has explosive initial quickness. He really marries his upper and lower bodies really well. You hear people talk about, defensive tackles that can get skinny. He just really does a nice job of using his hands and twisting his hips to be able to kind of slither through the line of scrimmage. And you mentioned the 71-yard touchdown off the interception. I mean, that is just a fantastic example of his athletic ability. But I say all those things, and why I do think that he is a good fit for Seattle if he were available to them, again, at number 56. At the same time, if I mentioned before Alex Leatherwood in the bouts of inconsistency, you kind of touched upon, Corbin, that Nixon is a guy who basically came out of nowhere for Iowa. And Iowa is a program that I love. We've talked so much about Kirk Ferentz and what he's done at that program. At the same time, you have not seen a lot of the Iowa defensive linemen come into the NFL and really take the league by storm the way that some of us have anticipated in the past. A.J. Epinesa was another one a year ago that had all kinds of buzz and then fell a little bit down the board on draft day. So I wonder if Nixon might be a player that again, the lack of consistency might be a little scary. And the fact that the defensive tackle class is not a good one, I think it sounds more like Seattle's kind of traditional MO to go with one of the stronger positional groups rather than trying to throw that dart, the dartboard, for a positional group that's a little bit lacking.
You do look at the 2020 numbers in just 8 games. Nixon had 5.5 sacks, 13.5 tackles for loss, 45 tackles. And of course, that interception I mentioned that he returned 71 yards for a touchdown. So you saw the All-America caliber talent this past season in an abbreviated year. The season before, just 3 sacks and 29 tackles. Not a bad season, but as you said, there's a small sample size, and those can be guys you can worry about a little bit investing a high pick in. But at 305 pounds with the athleticism this kid has, he would offer a lot of intrigue at that position. So I could see him being a guy that makes sense there. Pro Football Network in their mock draft, this would probably be the player of the four that I think is a little bit rich for pick 56 when you consider the Seahawks only have 3 draft choices. Another defensive tackle, this one coming out of North Carolina State, Aleem McNeil, a guy that is extremely explosive, has quick penetrating ability, can play that 3-tech position. So has a lot of traits that would match what the Seahawks typically draft at that position. But to me, he's kind of a poor man's Nixon. I think Nixon has more upside, and coming from the Big Ten, playing in the rugged Big Ten conference, to me, he's just a little better prospect. If they traded down 1 or 2 times and then picked McNeil, I would feel a little bit better with him in the 3rd-round range.
Oh, I agree. That's the thing. With McNeil, to me, he is a bit more of a traditional run stuffer that I don't know that you want to be investing the number 56 overall selection in. And I get the national perception that Seattle really needs to shore up the interior of the defensive tackle or the interior of the defensive line group. But at the same time, I just don't know that McNeil is worthy of that early of consideration. He's not much of a pass rusher. I believe he only had 1 sack a season ago, and kind of the opposite of Nixon in a way. As I was kind of talking about how Nixon really can kind of, maneuver his way through the line of scrimmage. With McNeil, what you see is a guy who just holds up. He's like a fire hydrant in the middle. He is just powerful, has that base, that great use of leverage and base strength that I think makes him a little bit more of a classic 1 or 0. As a true nose guard. It's 6'2", 320 pounds. He is not the penetrator. And so he's a little bit of a different kind of a guy, and one I think that Seattle already feels like they have bigger, stronger guys already in the fold with the aforementioned Al Woods, as well as Brian Monet. And then, as we've talked about so many times, Cedric Lattimore is another defensive tackle that I think a lot of these national pundits aren't recognizing how high Seattle might be on him.
Yeah, I think at 320 pounds, McNeil has a pretty good first step, and he's an explosive athlete, but I don't think he's on the same level that Nixon is, and you can see it in the pass rushing production too. He did have 5.5 sacks in 2019, but that was in 10 games. We saw Nixon produce similar numbers in 8 games last year and just had better testing numbers, a little smaller, but it just seems like he's a better 3-tech fit. McNeil could work in Seattle. I just think late 2nd, pick 56 is probably, as I said, a little too rich for me. The last one on here, Pro Football Focus, they went to the interior of the offensive line, and this to me is still where, if the Seahawks are going to really capitalize on this draft, they need to find a way to get one of the top centers if available there at pick 56. Creed Humphrey being the pick out of Oklahoma from Pro Football Focus's mock draft. We've talked Humphrey a lot on here. Mean, nasty, plays with an edge. He can win in the man and gap game. He can also win in the zone blocking scheme. Maybe a little shorter arms than you would want, but I don't think that's as big of a deal at the center position as it is at guard and especially tackle. I think you can get by with a shorter arm center, especially one like Humphrey that has good technique and plays with such a mean streak. I think he's a guy that comes in right away, beats out Ethan Posick for the starting job, and you've got him next to Damian Lewis. Those two guys are going to play at least 3 seasons together in the middle of your offensive line, and he's got a veteran in Gabe Jackson on the other side. Suddenly, the interior of that offensive line is looking like a major strength, and you know who's going to be happy about that? Russell Wilson.
Exactly. And I'm happy that you mentioned that. It's just kind of appealing to the quarterback, Russell Wilson. I think that might have been a little bit of what Pro Football Network was thinking about with, Aleem McNeil, North Carolina State, and Russell Wilson, of course, played his previous career at North Carolina State before making that transfer over to Wisconsin to wrap up his college time. I think that I agree more with the idea, the Pro Football Focus, and that you and I have talked about previously, that the interior of the offensive line is a bigger position of concern for the Seahawks. To me, Creed Humphrey is the best center in this draft class, given that my favorite center, Landon Dickerson from Alabama, is recovering from that ACL injury. But Humphrey is about as reliable as rain in Seattle, in my opinion. I mean, he is a guy that has been an upper-level starter for the Sooners after signing with that program. You know, obviously one of the elite teams in all of the country, and basically has been just a lockdown at the center position his entire career. And the power that he possesses, his quickness, the fact that he is every bit as good a shotgun snapper as he is in a traditional quarterback handoff, to me, he is a plug-and-play guy and one of the few of the four players that we just mentioned who I truly believe is a true plug-and-play guy and a guy very much worthy of number 56 overall if Seattle stays there and he is available at that spot.
Humphrey would be one of the few players that I think John Schneider, if he's still available at 56, would consider sitting pat at that position. And that's a perfect segue going into our third quarter, because we asked you, the listener, which players would be worth staying at 56, given that Seattle's only got three picks and they're going to be doing everything in their power to try to trade down. Which players would make John Schneider pause and reconsider trading down? We're going to examine your feedback when we return. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Are you looking for a way to boost your workout game? Are you seeking a delicious protein bar without the sugar and carbs? Enter in the Built Bar, 18 amazing flavors, including nut and non-nut flavors. Some of the best ones, caramel brownie, cookies and cream, apple almond crisp, peanut butter, double chocolate. You're going to have a tough time eating just one. These bars are covered in 100% chocolate, soft, easy to chew. It's great for the health conscious guy. Lose or maintain weight while indulging in a delicious treat. Bars are low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber, and they're great for a keto diet. Remember to use the promo code LOCKED15 to get 15% off your order. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. It's your host, Corbin Smith. Joining me for our Monday episode, my co-host in crime, Rob Rang. The NFL draft is weeks away, so it's time to start following our Locked On NFL draft duo. The Draft Dudes podcast watches every prospect so that you don't have to. And the Locked On NFL draft podcast is your daily draft news and mock draft podcast. Follow Locked On NFL Draft and Draft Dudes on the Odyssey app and wherever you get podcasts. John Schneider loves trading down as much as any general manager in the NFL. We know this from his track record. The Seahawks have never finished with less than eight new players exiting a draft. That is going to be put to the test this year, however. Only three draft picks after trading away a fifth rounder a few weeks ago to acquire Gabe Jackson from the Raiders. They traded a first and third round pick as part of the Jamal Adams deal. They sent a seventh rounder to Cincinnati for Carlos Dunlap. So most of their draft compensation now belongs to another team to acquire veterans. And that really puts the Seahawks in a difficult position because, yes, you'd love to get extra picks, but this is a deep class at center and receiver, two areas Seattle absolutely needs help. Cornerback also isn't shabby either. There's a chance an immediate starter slips to the end of the second round at one of those positions of need. So the big question becomes, which player would have to fall to pick 56 to warrant staying there and not trading down at least once? Rob, we're going to be rolling through several answers from our listeners on which players would be worth sitting pat at pick 56. And what better to start with than one of our former colleagues at the Seahawk Maven, Dan Vienne's tweeting, one of the left tackle prospects like Eichenberg or Leatherwood, the opportunity to get that guy now and groom him for a year behind Brown would set you up at that position for years while also saving a bunch of money against next year's salary cap.
That's a really, really good point. The only thing I would say is that assuming if we are going to kind of follow our line of thinking here and Seattle is not going to trade down, they're going to stay with those three initial draft picks. Let's just assume that they don't make any moves prior to the draft to get more draft picks. And I think that if you only have those three, and you know the basis of this exercise here is that a player who is so good that you're not going to trade down, then you really need those three players to be significant contributors immediately. ultimately. And so just knowing that Dwayne Brown is going to be your starter at left tackle, knowing that Brandon Shell is going to be your starter at the right tackle position, or at least that's the belief, and you feel a lot better about guard positions now, then I just don't know that Seattle is going to be as willing to take one of these offensive tackles. The depth is good enough that you might be able to wait a little bit longer. I personally love the selection of Liam Eikenberg from Notre Dame or Alex Leatherwood from Alabama, as we talked about before. So I very much agree with Dan. I just don't know that's what John Schneider is going to do at this point. I think that they would be looking at an interior offensive lineman if they were going to stand pat at number 56.
And that's where Mike Halsey went, tweeting, Creed Humphrey, the best center in the draft, pairs with Lewis and Jackson. We finally have an interior strong enough to stop Aaron Donald. We talked about Humphrey last quarter being one of the players picked in the Pro Football Focus mock draft at pick 56. And so clearly you and I both believe Humphrey would be a really good fit there at 56. That's one of the players on the board that would make a lot of sense to sit pat, despite only having three selections. Now, this is one that I think would stir up some controversy here. Taylor Weber tweets, Amon-Ra St. Brown, the receiver out of USC, I think would be a great fit in our offense. The Hawks don't really have a prototypical slot receiver on the roster, and having a guy like St. Brown would be great so Tyler Lockett can rotate between inside and outside receiver. We've talked about the need for that number three wideout, but Amon-Ra St. Brown at pick 56 without trading down, I don't know that's exactly the way the Seahawks should or are going to handle this.
Yeah, I just have a hard time with Amon-Ra St. Brown. To me, this is just a little bit too rich, as we talked about before with the defensive tackle, Liam McNeil from North Carolina State. I just see Amon-Ra St. Brown as more of a middle-round player. I absolutely agree that Seattle needs to get themselves another receiver. I don't know that's going to come as a rookie. It may wind up being one of the veterans. There's been a lot of buzz out there with like a Marquise Goodwin, for example, who I think would make a lot of sense for the Seahawks, just considering his deep threat ability. St. Brown is not the same kind of a guy. He is a slot receiver. He is reliable hands. To me, he actually reminds me a little bit of another former USC receiver. The Seahawks fans are not going to love this comparison, but Robert Woods. And so I think he's a terrific player. I just don't think that he's going to test well enough. I think that this wide receiver class is good enough. It's kind of like we talked about the offensive tackles that Dan Vienz had mentioned before. I just think that if you are looking at this particular draft class, if it's going to be somebody that Seattle is unwilling to trade down, then it's going to have to be a pretty exceptional player, and I don't see St. Brown being that exceptional of an athlete and that being as exceptional of a need to justify Seattle staying there at number 56.
Bob Snow went back to the offensive line saying Landon Dickerson, Creed Humphrey, or Quinn Miners, any one of them can come in and compete with Posick as a day one starter and are a potential 10-year starting center. Could be the answer to the biggest roster question the Seahawks have right now. Again, as we mentioned with Humphrey earlier, any one of those three players, Dickerson obviously has the injury concerns that you have to worry about. His medicals have to check out. And Quinn Miners is coming from a Division III school. Even though he looked outstanding at the Senior Bowl, that is still something to consider, the step up in competition, especially since he didn't play any snaps of football aside from the Senior Bowl last year. Again, he had a great week in Mobile, but there's some risk with those couple guys. But again, it's a position the Seahawks badly need a long-term answer. That may be what pushes John Schneider to stay there at 56 if one or more of those players are there at that pick. And I thought this one was interesting. Coming from Eli tweets, Dylan Radins. Radins would be an upgrade at right tackle right now and then could transition to left tackle when Brown retires. Again, Rob, it goes with the idea, let's draft towards the future. But this is mentioning maybe Radins coming in and pushing Brandon Shell right away. I don't know that that happens, but we know Pete Carroll absolutely loves competition.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And that's the thing is that Radins has played a little bit of both spots, and he is a guy that has the length, has the athletic ability that I think could be able to be a potential starter in the NFL, either one of those two positions. So, there again, makes a lot of sense. I just knowing the way that Seattle has done things in the past, that they have generally kind of avoided the small school players. And you and I have been talking about Quinn Miners, Wisconsin Whitewater a little bit as being a guy that makes a little bit of sense for the Seahawks as well. That is my biggest concern about why Seattle wouldn't consider a player like Miners, a player like Raidens or even a Spencer Brown from Northern Iowa, another big, long tackle who has positional versatility. I just think that, if Seattle is not going to take or if Seattle is going to stand pat number 56 overall, this is going to have to be a really special player. And of that group, then to me, that special player is Creed Humphrey. I think that Landon Dickerson can be that, but the durability concerns are so scary that I just have a hard time believing that Seattle would be willing to basically put all their eggs in one basket, so to speak, with the guy who's had the durability concerns that he's had.
This one is going to leave a lot of our listeners scratching their heads, but we had to include it. Swain Train tweets Kellen Mond, and then he put in apostrophes ducks. And I think you probably would want to duck with that kind of response. But can you imagine, Rob, how the internet would blow up if the Seahawks, without trading Russell Wilson, drafted Kellen Mond at pick 56 overall? We know there were reports out there that they were interested in Patrick Mahomes, and there's a couple other quarterbacks they've been linked to, Josh Allen before he was drafted by the Bills. So I guess it's not completely far-fetched, but I would be flat-out stunned if the Seahawks picked a quarterback at 56 overall.
Yeah, for the same reasons we talked about. Again, if you're number 56, you're expecting the guy to be able to come in and start, and you're not going to get any quarterback in this draft class who is going to be even close to, pushing Russell Wilson as Seattle's starting quarterback. Now, obviously, that would let Russell Wilson know that Seattle does believe that they may have to look into different options. They may have to be kind of grooming someone for the future. I have a hard time believing that. I will say I am a fan of Kellen Mond. And that John Schneider, I can confirm, it has gone on the road and has looked at some of the quarterbacks. He was at the North Dakota State workout where everybody was focusing on Trey Lance. But so, like, as one of our listeners, Eli, had mentioned, that Dylan Raidens, a North Dakota State tackle. So that might be somebody that Schneider was also scouting in that particular workout. So to me, that, again, I just have a hard time with the idea of Seattle drafting a quarterback that early. I wouldn't be surprised if they selected a quarterback this year, even with the three draft picks. But your first pick, again, I just have a hard time justifying that move.
Rob, let's talk real quick. Now that we've gotten some listener responses here, are there any players that weren't mentioned here? Is there one guy that, if you're John Schneider, is still available? And make it realistic, too. Obviously, Trevor Lawrence isn't falling to pick 56. But a player that realistically could be available at 56 that you, if you're John Schneider, are going to have a hard time not picking that player?
It's a tough question. I don't know that they're, because I look at Seattle's biggest area of concern right now at the cornerback position, but I also love the depth of this draft class at corner and Seattle's track record there. That I've talked a lot about Elijah Molden from the University of Washington. I really think with the slower than anticipated 40-yard dash times of his workouts that he is going to fall. And I really, really think that he's going to be a good NFL player. Asante Samuel, the corner from Florida State, another one of our listeners had kind of mentioned, he's another one with a classic corner. His bloodlines, his straight line speed, his ball skills, that he doesn't have that elite length, but at the same time, he has the speed and playmaking ability that Seattle's prioritized in the past. But to me, corner and receiver are two of the positions that I think if there's a special guy that the Seahawks absolutely fall in love with, those are the two positions that we talked about, the interior offensive line, of course, before. But those are the two kind of wild card positions that I think there could be a special player out there. I'll give you one more wide receiver too, Terrace Marshall from LSU. Not a lot of people are talking about him, but he is 6'3", 215 pounds. He can run, he can catch, he can block. And because of that LSU track record, we know how close that Pete Carroll is with that program, then that might be a fit as well.
I'm going to have to go with lightning in a bottle for my pick here. And I obviously understand the need for center and cornerback, but if Rondale Moore somehow is still available there at pick 56, you cannot tell me John Schneider is not going to be sitting there licking his lips thinking, I cannot trade down. That is the kind of player that the Seahawks have always been extremely intrigued by. I mean, they traded away a first-round pick to get Percy Harvin. We know it ultimately did not work out, but they are always looking for elite athletes. And Rondale Moore is like 5'8", 185, 190 pounds, and he squats 600 pounds. He is a freak, and I know he's had a couple injuries the last couple years, but this guy is an explosive athlete, and Shane Waldron wants another guy that can carry the football on fly sweeps. this guy could be a nightmare to deal with in that style offense. And you put him with DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett, I think it would be a really nasty trio of receivers for the Seahawks moving forward. If he's there at 56, I can't see John Schneider passing up on the opportunity to take him, even if that is not the biggest need on their roster. You can follow me on Twitter at CorbinSmithNFL. You can follow Rob at Rob Rang. Follow Locked On Seahawks on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and the all-new Odyssey app. That's AUDACY. Coming up on tomorrow's show, we'll be debating the best first-round picks in Seahawks franchise history for Throwback Tuesday. Plus, we'll continue our draft series with center prospects, which players in the second, fourth, and seventh rounds could be a fit for the Seahawks at the pivot position. Thanks for listening in. Enjoy the rest of your Monday. Go Hawks.